From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a political newcomer became a huge star, thanks largely to radio and television. In fact, this person was a dangerous demagogue, someone who looks down on their supporters and exploits them. But he rises to fame based on his broadcast success. He has ambitions for power. He runs through women and relationships. He treats his exes poorly. He mocks those whom he views as lesser than him. Will America continue to support him and fuel his rise? You know who I'm talking about, right? Why, it's Larry Rhodes, of course. This is the story of a 1957 film called A Face in the Crowd, starring Andy Griffith as Larry Lonesome Rhodes. The New York Times critic at the time wrote that the film, it was highly entertaining, but also well worth pondering. In other words, it was a kind of warning about giving one man too much power based on a flimsy resume of bluster and television success. Think about that. That was 1957. This hour, a conversation about the best and worst films about politics. Which political films had a lasting impact? Which flopped? What was fun? What worked? My guests are going to give us a little bit of break from the heavy discussions on politics, and we'll talk Hollywood this hour. Jack Garner's a longtime film critic. Welcome back, Jack.
Hey, good to be here.
And Les Friedman, professor and former chair of the Media and Society Program at Hobart and William Smith College. Les, welcome to you as well. Oh,
thanks, Evan.
I've never seen A Face in the Crowd. And I know it's not at the top of the list of great films, but I was amazed that I didn't know much about this film. And we got a couple of clips from it, but it feels, you know, some people may find that strangely prescient, I guess.
No, I would think that's true. It was made by a great filmmaker, too, Ilya Kazan.
Right.
And what was interesting is it had Andy Griffith playing a really kind of slimy guy, and yet he turned out to be, you know, the great American as Andy of Mayberry, but yeah, it's about how do you go about making a president who's not necessarily president material, or who we wouldn't have thought would ever be a president, and which makes it pretty prescient right now.
Right. No, it's true. There's several films about that. In a different way, The Candidate takes a Robert Redford, a charming, handsome guy with a little bit on the ball, and boom. He becomes a political star.
And Preston Sturges' comedy, The Great McGinty, is about a guy who becomes president who you would never in a million years expect to be running for office.
So we've got some clips. So occasionally I'll be able to play a clip if you haven't seen some of these films. So I'll start with just a clip. We'll move on in a second from Face in the Crowd. But in this clip, we've got so this character, Larry Lonesome Rhodes, who kind of gets plucked into plucked out of the American South in the wilderness and becomes this popular media personality. And in this clip, his longtime producer and girlfriend, Marcia Jeffries, played by Patricia Neal, finally sees the problem with the personality that she has created.
Afraid it's true.
What's true?
Right here tonight, you might have that much power.
In your ratings this morning? 53.7. Just picked up another million. This whole country's just like my flock of sheep.
Sheep.
Rednecks, crackers, hillbillies, housefrows, shut-ins, pea-pickers. Everybody that's got to jump when somebody else blows the whistle. They don't know it yet, but they're all gonna be fighters for Fuller. They're mine. I own them. They think like I do. Only they're even more stupid than I am, so I gotta think for them. Marcia, you just wait and see. I'm going to be the power behind the president, and you'll be the power behind me.
That is Andy Griffith in a way that a lot of people don't expect him.
Right.
And does that feel, I mean, how does that feel in 2016? Isn't that interesting? Well, here's Andy Griffith in 1972, so 15 years after this film. He was talking about his career, talking about other films, and ended up talking about that character with Fred Griffith, who, from my hometown, Cleveland, this was on Morning Exchange in 1972, and this is Andy Griffith talking about that character.
What it was the story of a man who was an entertainer who had some power, who had access to the media, to the television,
well,
who parlayed that into a political situation.
Yeah, he became, I guess people at that time didn't think it could happen. It can happen. It can happen. And has happened at times. It might be happening now. Who knows?
Who knows?
But this was a regular, just an interesting, energetic guy at the beginning, a free kind of a man. And he discovered radio, and then he discovered television, and then he became accepted by people, and he became their folk hero. And then he he started to manipulate them and tell them how to think, and they would do what he said do. And then he began to realize how much power he really had. And he started to influence the politicians. And he was about to launch this real loser into political office when when the country discovered him by means of Patricia Neal, who played a role called Marcia. She left the audio switch open.
At the end of the
show. At the end of a show, at the end of a program, and the people actually heard what he said, and he called them sheep, and he called them that they would do exactly what he said do, and how dumb and stupid they were. Then they turned him off, but mm-hmm. he took that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was strong. Who was that man?
Who was
that?
Is
1972.
Wow.
Who is that man?
Well, wow! Isn't that in something?
Yeah, it is amazing, and I also think of Willie Stark when I hear this in you know All the King's Men, and both of those characters are blue collar characters who rise up. So it's very different than Trump. But you know, I Hollywood has always functioned like a two way mirror in some ways, in the sense that the world sees us through our media, through Hollywood films, but in another really important way, we see ourselves, Americans see themselves as Hollywood films, through Hollywood films. And that mixture of politics and entertainment has always been with us. As I was thinking about the show tonight, I realized I started looking at the various kind of entertainers who had become politicians.
Reagan, most notably.
Reagan is the big one, but yeah. There's also George Murphy, there's Shirley Temple, right. There's Clint Eastwood, who was mayor of Carmel, California, Sonny Bono. And here's the one that threw me. P.T. Barnum was actually elected to the state legislature in Connecticut. I mean, that is the ultimate. And also, there's always Hollywood people who always are talked about.
Pardon? Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, Schwarzenegger. I forgot Schwarzenegger. But they always talk about Redford as running. They always talk about George Clooney as running. Mm-hmm. And certainly, this connection between the politicians use Hollywood for glamour, and Hollywood uses the politicians for access, and also to use them if they want to make particularly war films, as Jack well knows. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to use the equipment, the backgrounds, all of that, and you need access. The Motion Picture Association of America has an office in Washington. What more do you need to know?
Well, you know, I was thinking, listening to the clips and everything about a face in the crowd. In some ways, it is really, truly the dark, cynical side of one of the most optimistic films along the same line, which was Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Right.
Frank Capra, who made very optimistic films. That was also a guy who out of the blue gets elected, and he ends up having the congressional speech of his life. And so there are two different points of view on the idea of coming out of nowhere, I guess.
That hold up as a great one to you, Jack?
Well, Mr. Smith is for sure a great one. Yeah. You know, it's not cynical. I mean, it's very optimistic. In fact, there are a handful of films I wrote down that are what I called movies with idealism at the core. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Dave.
Dave is like the most saccharine, idealistic movie ever, yeah, but I still loved it.
And then The American President, which inspired the creation of The West Wing on TV, which is also very important.
Is that right, by the way? I didn't know
that. Yeah, well, they used the same set, and I think the idea of American President and that he was a good guy and everybody liked his idealism, you know, that all played into it. Those are examples of where where it works out good. You know, that people come from different places and from the hardcore fabric of America and create good things. But then there's Face in the Crowd and Bulworth and All the King's Men and all these movies that show the more dark side.
But there's a current TV show that's interesting. It's only shown the pilot so far, Designated Survivor with Kiefer Sutherland, where the guy is like Secretary of Urban Housing. He's never been elected. And through a horrible attack on Washington, he becomes president.
Which, by the way, it's interesting. Ted Cruz probably likes this show because Kiefer Sutherland proves you can be a Canadian and be elected president.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Okay, so Jack and Les are here to talk, pal. We got a lot more clips to play here. So, but let me ask both of you then, if you're picking one, what is the top political movie, Jack? What's the best movie on this list?
Wow, that's a hard call. But you know, there's a couple that I love that are both satires. One is Duck Soup. The Marx Brothers, which says a whole lot about war and how war comes to be and how silly it is despite its bloodshed. And then the other is a satire by one of my favorite directors, Preston Sturges, called The Great McGinty. But yeah, there's so many good movies. The Best Man is a great one. Mr. Smith, I mentioned earlier, is considered a classic, and A Face in the Crowd. It's hard to pick one. You know?
Well, yeah, I because I'm so much younger than Jack,
rub it in, Les.
I tend to like the more cynical post-Vietnam films, and an underscored film is Parallax View, which is paranoia par excellence. But I really do love Wag the Dog, as much as I think that's an upsetting movie that you can essentially declare war for no reason on, what is Albania, right?
Right,
they declare war on Albania, and they convince the public to go along.
It's a great movie about spin.
It's a great movie about spin.
The other one that I just saw last week, again, I saw it earlier this year. It's a film of 2016 that I think is a really great one about global politics. It's called Eye in the Sky, about drone warfare and what it's doing to what it potentially could do. So there are a lot, and it's a good topic. John Ford made a great one called The Last Hurrah about city politics.
That's right.
With Spencer Tracy. You could do a whole festival for sure.
Yeah, and I've already mentioned All the King's Men, which I think is a fabulous film about politics. Roger Crawford won the Academy Award as Willie Stark.
Right.
And listeners, I see you weighing in on various forms here. If you want to call the program, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Best and maybe the worst of politics movies. Our friend Dave Andriotta says The Candidate. Bruce, listening out in Colorado, says The Candidate, number one by far. Mm-hmm. David on Twitter says Bullworth. So you're seeing a range here. So I've got some themes we want to do here. Can we get a clip from Wag the Dog? I'd like to talk to you what you guys think about films like this that I want to talk about. Films with a message, because there's films of idealism. Jack has a list not only of films, but also films that are more idealistic.
Right.
And then there are films that, you know, are they trying to at least move the discussion at all? And Wag the Dog it's been a while since I've seen it. You've got Dustin Hoffman, who is a Hollywood producer who gets brought in to create a fake war for an election, right?
Robert De Niro is the guy that controls the whole thing.
And the purpose of the war being to help, move electoral numbers, right?
Get the focus off the president and onto something else. I mean, you tend to forget that wars have been... We went into Grenada to get our focus off something that had gone wrong during the Reagan administration. War has traditionally been a way to focus the country's attention away from what was going on domestically. You know, we bombed people when Clinton got in trouble, too, with the Monica Lewinsky affair. So it has been in real life as well as on the screen.
All right, in this clip, you've got Conrad Breen, who is the spin doctor, Robert De Niro, approaching Hollywood producer Stanley Motz, that's Dustin Hoffman, to help fabricate a war in Albania. He calls the war a pageant.
Yes.
Why Albania?
Because.
Well, they have to have something we want.
Well, I'm sure they do.
What do we have that they want?
A little freedom.
Well, why would they want that?
Oppress? No. Freedom. They want to destroy the godless Satan of the United. They want to destroy our way of life, all right? Okay. The president is in China. He is dealing with the dispatch of the B-3 bomber to Albania. Why? Why? Help me.
Well, I mean, but that's...
Well, all right. Let's see, geopolitically, if you...
We just found out they have the bomb.
That's...
We just found out they have the bomb.
That's good.
No, the bomb's not there because they'd have to have a rocket and that shit, right? And they are a bunch of wogs. No, cross out. All right, so it's a suitcase bomb.
I didn't even know I said that.
It's a suitcase bomb. You don't need missiles.
You can put a bomb in a suitcase, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a suitcase bomb.
Yeah, that's good.
Suitcase bomb? Yes?
It's a suitcase bomb.
When it's cooking, it's cooking. We're cooking, and it's in Canada. All right? Albanian terrorists have placed a suitcase bomb in Canada in an attempt to infiltrate the bomb into the USA.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
That's good. That's terrific. And I'll tell you why it is cost effective.
Well, it's producing. That's what it is.
Oh, my gosh. We're dying here listening to this clip here. Oh.
You know, this is cynical upon cynical. If you remember, I hope I'm not being too much of a spoiler. Eventually, the producer, the Hoffman character, is so proud of his work, he wants to publicize it. And, of course, De Niro won't let him, and they kill the producer.
They have to.
Oh, they have to.
To protect, you can't claim.
Right. He wants to put it up.
You're not getting an Oscar for this one, Dustin Hoffman.
No.
You know, Les, does the film work for you? Because obviously you've got a great cast.
Oh, yeah.
You got great dialogue. But does a film like that work more if it makes us think, okay, this is a little on the extreme edge, but how often does our own country engage in stuff like this?
Well, you know, I teach media, and one of the things I teach about is that nothing is neutral in media. I mean, you know, we could have a discussion about all films being political to one degree or another. I mean, they all have value judgments. The Western hero, the musical where the right people get together. But in the political film, and specifically political films like we're talking about today, at the fade-out, the social order sort of has to be restored. One of the things about Wag the Dog is it isn't. I mean, they win. And they convince the American public of this threat of war. So for me, it works because it, number one, shows the power of the media, and number two, how easily the media can be used to manipulate. You know, we'll get back to this in a second, but the other thing we should mention quickly, I forgot about it, is Veep. And I heard Julia Louis-Dreyfus say they started out that show thinking it was satire, and it's now become cinema verite.
And also talking about the political films that all end up, wrap it up good at the end or something. Another one that didn't wrap it up good is Dr. Strangelove, which I just now thought
of. Yes, yeah. Yes, you're right.
And they wrapped it up about as bad as it can ever be wrapped up.
In riding a nuclear warhead.
Yeah.
Riding a nuclear warhead down.
Yeah. But, it's... It's an area fraught with possibilities of cynicism and optimism, depending on who's making the movie. But the idealism versus the realities of some of this stuff.
And Jack, if you're reviewing Wag the Dog, again, how much does the message or at least the lesson of that kind of a film, does it matter? Does it impact the way you're assessing it?
No, yeah, for sure. I mean, if a film calls out a concept that it's trying to explore and delineate, that is one of the judgments as a critic I would make, is how well does it do it? Does it succeed in making its case, so to speak? It's like your last hour with the debaters. Mm-hmm. The idea was, do they win the debate by making the case that they need to make?
Yep.
And so that's certainly a judgment that you make as you look at a film, and whether it's any good or not is whether it sort of makes the case. And even if it's something outlandish, within the context of the world of the film, do they make the case? And so you judge that as well. And the Wag the Dog, also you like the cleverness and the smartness of it. I mean, even the title, Wag the Dog.
Right.
You sort of have to know a little bit about what's going on in the world to even know what that title means, you know. So that's part of the whole thing. I agree that it's part of the judgment.
All right, let me get to some of your phone calls. Mary in Rochester. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, good morning. Good afternoon.
Yeah.
I remember a movie that I used to see on Schiller Theater, and it was called The Man Who Reclaimed His Head. Do you know that movie? With Claude Rains?
The Man Who Reclaimed His Head.
Yeah.
I know Claude Rains, and I know, but I don't know that movie.
Yeah, it sounds like a horror film.
It is.
Oh, it's not a horror movie. It's not. It's very political, and it was about pretty much like Bernie Sanders allows old Rupert Murdoch to, give out his ideas, and everybody loves them, and then he switches over, and he gets in bed with like the enemy, and it's just how he just, he twists his words. It's really a good movie. So if you ever see it anywhere, it's really good though.
So wow. Reclaiming the head would be like when you have a horse and you let the horse have his own way, and then you reclaim his head.
Reclaims his head.
Yeah, that's
No, that's interesting.
I hate to be a spoiler, but yeah, at the very end, he does reclaim his head.
Well, if Claude Rains is in it, I'll go look for
there
it anyway.
You Thank right? you, Mary. Right. Thank you for that, Mary. I appreciate that.
Stump the panel.
It's rare.
Yes, I know.
It has to be somewhat obscure. And some of our listeners on Twitter are jumping in with some films that we haven't quite hit yet. Primary, did that? I don't know if that
Primary Colors.
Primary Colors, which is kind of a romantic cliff about Clinton. You know, it's about the Clinton world.
I think a couple people said Primary. I think there must be a separate movie.
Oh, there is a
Primary,
movie called Primary.
That I don't know much about.
But I don't either.
Okay.
I mean, I seem to remember seeing it vaguely. But
and Primary Colors is based on the book by Anonymous, which turned out to be Time Magazine's Joe Klein, I believe.
Right.
And yeah, it was essentially, it was about the Clinton campaign, right?
And The Ides of March is another good one, which is about a political campaign with George Clooney. And what's notable for film lovers like me is it's the only film in which the two greatest character actors of their age co-starred, and that's Phil Hoffman and Paul Giamatti.
Absolutely.
I forgot, by the way, that John Travolta played Governor Jack Stanton, who was Clinton.
Oh, exactly. He played him perfectly.
And played him really, really well. Yeah. And we've got a clip from Primary Colors. So you've got Stanton, who's John Travolta, debating his opponent on TV, timely, and then dealing with a reporter's question about his past.
I mean, we do need to provide jobs for those who need work. That is true.
Jack, excuse me. What, if anything, are you against?
I'm against doing nothing while people are suffering. I'm against dismissing any idea that might help, because it isn't my idea. Now, Senator, you have met these people. You have looked into their eyes. Are you saying that we should do nothing to help unless we come up with
it? Oh, absolutely.
Neil,
got it.
He's toast.
Grand slam. As good as he gets.
How was that?
He took it, honey. It was yours. Sure.
Governor March Cunningham, the Black Advocate, were you ever arrested during the Vietnam War?
No.
You were never arrested in Chicago?
No, I was accidentally detained and then released. You could be thinking of that, but the record was expunged.
Do you remember how you were released, Governor?
Well, they realized it was a mistake.
Come on.
It was a long time ago.
Check your records.
Okay.
Wow.
It's the John Travolta.
Detained.
Accidentally detained.
Yeah.
Instead of an arrest there. He's got the cadence of Clinton down pretty well there.
Yeah, he does.
It was pretty good. I had forgotten it was Travolta. That's one that might be fun to go back and watch here. Let me go ahead and get back to you on the phones. And this is Bill in Brighton next up. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi, Evan. There was a movie that was recently on Netflix that was well acted, about a woman who was nominated, I think, to run for the presidency.
The contender.
And the person that was running against him accused her of some sexual escapades, which were false. But the whole plot around that was quite interesting. I can't remember the name of the movie, but I thought you people would know what it was.
The Contender, right?
It's The Contender.
Joan Allen.
Yes. Joan Allen was the woman. And it's a good movie.
It's an excellent movie.
Yeah.
That help you, Bill?
That does. The other one is, what was the movie where the person was accused of faking a drowning and was running for someone, and they found out that the whole thing had been staged to give a heroic viewpoint to his candidacy? Was that a different movie?
Don't know that one. You stumped the critics on that one.
I yeah, I don't know that one.
Speaking of stumping the critics off air, John in Brighton wants to know if you guys know about a British film called A Very British Coup.
I do. Good film. It has Mimi Kennedy in, by the way, from here, an actress who's originally from Mercy High School, and a good actress. And it's a British sort of film. It's more of a British political scenario, although it has Yanks involved too.
You know what's at the heart of why all these films are interesting, I think, is that they represent a kind of threat to American democracy. And sometimes, as in Mr. Smith or even in The Manchurian Candidate, you have a lone individual who's willing to stand up for American democracy and essentially save the country. I mean, it very much is a Western, actually, when you think about it.
Everything in a way is a Western.
Everything's a Western, I agree.
Manchurian Candidate is also an interesting film. And who would have ever imagined that some sort of leader in an Asian country would try to get involved in our politics? I can't even imagine.
No. All right, so I have never seen The Manchurian Candidate.
Either one. There's two versions.
I know.
Two of them, yeah. You got to see the first one.
So I'm outing myself here, but we've got a clip from the film with Angela Lansbury, and this is How far back we go? When was this?
It was right after Kennedy's assassination. No, it was right before Kennedy's assassination, because when Kennedy was assassinated, Sinatra, who stars in it, and John Frankenheimer, who directed it, together decided to pull it off the market because it's about a political assassination, and they thought it hit too close to home with Kennedy. So it was off the market for a long time. By the way, those of you who think Angela Lansbury is just the sweetest thing since sliced bread, she is really evil in this movie.
Well, here you go. And you've got... She plays Mrs. Eleanor Iceland, and she drives the political career of her husband and Raymond Shaw's stepfather, Senator John Yerkes Iceland, a McCarthy-like demagogue, widely dismissed as a fool. But it turns out, unknown to many people, or Miss Iceland herself is actually a communist agent with a plan intended to secure the presidency under communist influence. And in the clip we have here, she reveals a plot to assassinate their party's presidential nominee at the nominating convention so that Senator Iceland, as the VP candidate, will become the nominee by default and be elected with emergency powers.
You are to shoot the presidential nominee through the head, and Johnny will rise gallantly to his feet and lift Ben Arthur's body in his arms and stand in front of the microphones and begin to speak. The speech is short, but it's the most rousing speech I've ever read. It's been worked on here and in Russia on and off for over 8 years. I shall force someone to take the body away from him. Then Johnny will really hit those microphones and those cameras with blood all over him, fighting off anyone who tries to help him, defending America even if it means his own death, rallying a nation of television viewers into hysteria to sweep us up into the White House with powers that will make martial law seem like anarchy.
This is powerful stuff. Her son is Lawrence, played by Lawrence Harvey. He was a prisoner during the Korean War, I believe it is. And as a prisoner of war, he is, brainwashed. Mm-hmm. Brainwashed into being amendable to the idea of shooting the president. And that's where the title Manchurian Candidate comes from. He's the candidate that the Chinese and the Koreans have planted this seed of an idea. And then the mother his mother, Angela Lansbury, works in conjunction with them to get this going. And that's what that little speech was about. And she actually, this is the most incredible performance. I mean, she actually seduces her own son to try to get him to do this. It's bizarre, but very powerful.
Did you say seduces?
Seduces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's true. You know, it's interesting when you look at these presidential or political films in different eras, you can see what the threat is to the country, you know, or what at least Hollywood perceives as the threat to the country. So here, of course, it is communism. And, you know, that leads you to begin to think about HUAC and Hollywood 10. And I mean, the points where the government, if you will, and Hollywood have actually butted heads with each other as opposed to working together as often is the case. But this film in particular is very much part of the Red Scare era.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, and we'll continue with your phone calls. So David, Keith, and Tom will come to you. Gary writes to us and says, The Best Man with Henry Fonda. We've got a clip from The Best Man. If you haven't seen it, that's on there, both Jack and Les's list. And we've got a clip from that. Jack's a longtime film critic. You know Jack Garner. You know Les Friedman, professor and former chair of the Media and Society Program at Hobart and William Smith College. We're talking best and worst when it comes to political films, and we continue with that in a short moment. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, after the debacle in Florida in the 2000 election, author Marshall Lawson wrote a book called Design for Democracy. It's all about how to build a more fair voting system. So how are we doing? She's coming to RIT, and she's my guest first hour. Then second hour, I talk to Drew Lanham, author of the book The Home Place, Memoirs of a Colored Man's Love Affair with Nature. He's coming to the zoo, and we'll talk to him. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Gary says The Best Man with Henry Fonda. Political conventions when they still meant something. That goes back to what, the 60s, right?
Yeah, very powerful. It's about two guys running for office, Henry Fonda and Cliff Robertson. And it's about all the backroom, smoky backroom kind of infighting and stuff going on at a convention to try to get somebody nominated. And the big scene for my money, you have a clip, I know, and I don't think this is the clip you have, but there is a great moment where Shelley Berman, the great comedian and character actor, who's phenomenal in this scene, he comes in with a brief but important scene, in which he tells the candidate that the opposing candidate had once had a homosexual liaison with him. And this was at a time when that would really, really shock. And so it was a big moment in the thing. But that's the kind of dirty infighting that goes on during this convention. This was written by Gore Vidal, who knows of conventions and politics and history.
So you've got Lee Tracy and Henry Fonda here. Lee Tracy playing the president and Henry Fonda playing the Secretary of State. And in this clip, the president gives the Secretary of State advice to help secure the nomination, but Fonda thinks these are dirty tactics.
I know what I should do, and this is not it.
Dan, you don't want to be king of the castle, so stay away from us. Be a saint on your own time, because you ain't fit to lead anybody.
Why, because I won't shoot off a cannon to kill a bug? Because I don't have that mindless reflex you confuse with strength? Don't you understand? If I start to fight like Cantwell, I lose all meaning.
If you don't start to fight, you are finished. Now, I am here to tell you this, that power is not a toy that we give to good children. It's a weapon, and the strong man takes it and he uses it. And if you don't go down there and beat Joe Cantwell to the floor with this very dirty stick, then you've got no business in this big league. Because if you don't fight, this job is not for you, and it never will be.
That dirty stick, by the way, is the Shelley Berman story.
Right.
Yeah. The one that you, yeah.
And he doesn't use it.
I actually forgot that, but anyway.
He decides not to use it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think
well,
so.
Henry Fonda was...
Best man.
Well, he was also ideal for anything that has to do with idealism.
Right.
he was the 12th jury in the, 12 Men Out, or 12, whatever it was called. The jury movie.
12 Angry Men.
12 Angry Men.
12 Angry Men.
Yeah,
so. Oxbow Incident. To go Oxbow through the whole Incident. Thing. And speaking of political films, young Mr. Lincoln.
Yeah.
He was Abraham Lincoln.
And Mr. Roberts. And Mr. Roberts. Beloved Mr. Roberts.
Well, he really was the Mr.
Loved
idealism.
Henry Fonda.
Everybody loved Henry
Why wasn't he president?
That's right.
Right.
Paul writes to us on Twitter and says, I just tuned in, so you might have said this. We didn't, Paul. He said, The Man with James Earl Jones about the first black president of the United States was a great TV flick from the 1970s, a television flick. I don't know it.
So, I never saw it either, but that was obviously precedent.
Yeah. Megan Mack, maybe you can help us just with a little bit of backstory on James Earl Jones as the man in the 1970s. And Paul, thank you for that. I had not heard of that. And we'll get back to your calls now, and let's go to David in Canandaigua next up. Go ahead, David.
Hey, Evan, let's not forget the 1941 classic with Orson Welles, Citizen Kane, about a man born into great wealth with Orson Welles and the famous line from the Everett Sloan, he always choked on that silver spoon in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes on to political disgrace after a great moment in the film.
You're absolutely right. Citizen Kane is also very much a political film. We think of it as a rise to power film and a media film, but as part of the process, he does try to run for office and gets caught in that lover's nest by his rival, and so that's exactly true. You know, that's a great film and a great example.
Right. Again, a mixture of the media and politics, and how you control one, you can certainly be competitive in the other. He was about to win. Up until that moment, they use it against him.
David,
yeah,
you want to go ahead.
He had a chance to back out with grace, but he decided not to.
Right.
Wow. Thank you, David, for that. And you know, I honestly, when I thought just in preparing for this conversation, Citizen Kane didn't come to mind immediately as a politics film. You know, as a political film. But
well, you tend to forget that that's the big part of the whole rigmarole. But it is part of a rigmarole. There's also the whole wealthy thing and the whole. But the fact remains that Susan Alexander affair is what stopped him from getting into politics.
Right.
And, that's true. It's a political film, among many other things.
Hey, Paul on Twitter, thank you for this. Megan Mack, producer, sends me this brief note, so we're broadening our horizons here. The Man is a 1972 political drama directed by Joseph Sargent, starring James Earl Jones. Jones playing Douglas Dillman, the president pro tempore of the United States Senate, who succeeds to the presidency through a series of unforeseeable events, thereby becoming both the first African-American president and the first wholly unelected one. The screenplay was written by Rod Serling, largely based upon The Man, a novel by Irving Wallace.
Wow. Rod Serling. Right away, I'm interested in seeing it.
Ithaca. Ithaca native. You know, there are several films, Jack, that have now black presidents, right? I mean, there's one with Morgan Freeman.
Right.
And I think there's another one with the guy who does the commercials. His name is not Terrence Howard. There's another one. But, I mean, you know, in we now see this, and it doesn't strike us as science
unlikely
fiction,
or,
yeah, exactly. Because it happened.
Right.
And speaking of the fact that it happened, James Earl Jones now would advise all of us not to watch that film. In 2009,
really?
He did an interview with the Los Angeles Times in 2009, 4 days before Barack Obama was inaugurated as president. And James Earl Jones was asked about having portrayed the fictional first black U.S. president. He replied, quote, "I have misgivings about that one. It was done as a TV special. Had we known it was to be released as a motion picture, we would have asked for more time and more production money, and I regret it."
Oh.
Well, he may be talking artistically. There might be some aspect of it that he didn't like, but who knows?
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
Next up, Keith in Rochester. Go ahead, Keith.
Mr. Dawson mentioned message movies from 1960, The Dark at the Top of the Stairs, starring Robert Preston and Dorothy McGuire. Life in a small town in Oklahoma, one of the main themes, anti-Semitism. This movie is never mentioned. It's one of my all-time favorites, The Dark at the Top of the Stairs. It may not be political in your category,
sure,
but if you remember that 1960 movie, it's very good. Well, Robert Preston, Dorothy McGuire.
You know, I actually know that movie. Because one of the first books I ever wrote was on how Jews have been presented in American cinema. And I remember being surprised with Preston's portrayal there, how really, really strong it was and how overtly it dealt with anti-Semitism as well.
Also had a great writer. It was by William Hinge, who also wrote Come Back, Little Sheba. And he was kind of like the second only to Tennessee Williams at that time of those kind of playwrights. And you're right, it's a very powerful film.
You know, it's interesting we talk about this. When I talk to my introductory to media classes, we often talk about the two great eras that have been able to use film effectively as propaganda. And Hollywood would be the third, of course, but it would be Nazi Germany and Stalin Russia. I mean, they really harnessed the power of the film to present a political message both overtly and more broadly as to the values of their systems of government.
It helped Hitler that he had one of the great filmmakers of all time working for him, a woman named Leni Riefenstahl. And if you're ever curious, I actually discovered that on YouTube, where you can find a lot of movies, full-length movies.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
And one of the movies you can get on YouTube and sit at your computer and watch it sometime is called Triumph of the Will, which is her great film about the rise of Hitler. And it's obviously you don't want to swallow what it says, but it's brilliantly made.
It is.
Tom in Greece, next up. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, hello. Thank you. I agree with you about a lot of these films, especially The Manchurian Candidate. I was thinking of another film. Well, I'll go on to another one, but I was thinking of another film with Angela Lansbury, The State of the Union, in which Spencer Tracy gives a very strong performance. Yeah. And there's also Lincoln with Daniel Day-Douglas. The one I'm trying to think of, mainly, and I can't remember the name of it, came out a few years ago in the 2000s with, Robin Williams. And I can't remember the name of it, but he plays somebody like a Phil Donahue or somebody who hosts a television show. It's a talk show or something.
Is that Death to Smoochie?
Becomes...
No, it's not Death to Smoochie.
There's one of the ones that...
But it's like The Man or something, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, pardon me. And then he becomes famous through television, and then he runs for president, and then they show a picture of him. He's disguised as George Washington with the wig and the 18th century costume and everything, and so, but I can't remember the name of that. It's starred Robin Williams.
Man of the Year.
Man of the Year. I knew Man was in it.
Well,
I get half credit. Half credit.
Will Mr. Garner come to my rescue?
No, he just did. Les did. It's Man of the Year, and the staff here, the fine crack staff here, came through.
Megan, producer.
And by the way, just to gently correct you, the Daniel Day of Lincoln, of course, was Daniel Day Lewis. You had said Douglas, not meaning to, I know. But that is a great film. And I also just thought, talking about the Robin Williams film, another great one, we can just keep going on this, is Being There. being there, about with Chauncey Gardner, played by the great Peter Sellers. Yeah. Who and written from the it's from the Jerzy Kosinski book, and it's about this character who is a gardener who says he likes television and he watches TV, and all of a sudden he becomes more and more powerful and looks like he's going to run for office. So it's, you know, it's that's another interesting film.
And he says things about gardening and they take it as metaphors.
Exactly.
It's fabulous.
Yeah, it's a fabulous film.
Gina in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Gina.
Hi. I wondered if anyone mentioned Gabriel over the White House, a 1933 movie at the height of the Depression that suggested fascism might be a good way to solve the Depression. And it was starred Walter Houston and also Karen Morley and French O'Toole.
Wow.
Excellent. If you ever get a chance to see it.
I think we have the most movie-literate audience I've ever seen. Jack and I are actually pretty good.
It's amazing, isn't it?
And there's three times they've mentioned films we don't know.
Well, this one sounds vague with me, or Walter Houston, not but I'm not sure. But it's, I guess it's, you know. Another great one talking about the warning about the Nazis is Charlie Chaplin, The Great Dictator, which is a classic film about, because he plays a barber who just incidentally and accidentally looks just like Adolf Hitler. And he gets mad that some German dictator happens has the nerve to look like him. And then at the end of the film, he very famously, and you can get this on YouTube too, he very famously gives this very long, but it succeeds, speech about, you know, what we ought to really be concerned about. There's also the great scene where he takes a big gigantic balloon that is a globe of the country and he sort of throws it around like it's a beach ball. Great movie.
And you know, many times these political films that are comic, and I'm thinking of Duck Soup here, really have some serious points to make about our political system. I mean, that film also seems very prescient in the fact of how big money can really influence the political system.
Right, exactly true. Also, did you know there's a town just the other side of Buffalo called Fredonia?
Mm-hmm.
And Fredonia is also the name of the town, of the kingdom, rather, in Duck Soup. And so when Duck Soup came out, the mayor of Fredonia wrote Groucho Marx and said, "How dare you use the name of our town for that?" And Groucho Marx wrote back, I simply suggest you change the name of your town."
That's a great story. A couple people have mentioned the American President and Dave, and that kind of came up briefly earlier. But just let me ask here. In the 90s, these movies, I think Dave was 1993. If you don't know Dave, Kevin Kline plays a guy who's kind of a lookalike to the American President. The American President, also played by Kevin Kline, who is having extramarital affairs and is not really doing the people's will and has a stroke, I believe, and is alive but barely. And they decide, the close staff of the president decide that in order to keep the patina of safety and confidence and continuity, that they'll get this presidential lookalike to play him. And of course, he comes in, he does a great job, but he's an idealist and he sees, I can save this homeless shelter.
Right.
You know, I can do all these great things that the real Bill Mitchell wasn't actually doing.
Right.
Sigourney Weaver plays the First Lady. I think she even falls in love with him.
She does. She does.
I wonder, does that feel like over saccharine kind of idealism, or did it work for you guys?
It plays into our wish fulfillment. We kind of wish the president was like that.
Well, the other thing is,
Martin Sheen in The West Wing. Didn't we all want him to be our president?
We wanted him to be president. The other thing that's going on that strikes me as interesting, again, these things have contemporary resonances, is that people are saying, I don't know if you saw the moment where people out of the Oliver Show interviewed various supporters and they swore that Hillary Clinton now had a double going around for her because she was really very sick. And I thought to myself, we're in Dave land.
Yeah,
that's what's going on here.
We're in Dave land?
The movie Dave.
I see. Yes. So
who would it be? Meg Ryan?
Yes. A couple others. So that's Dave. The American President was who played? Is it Kirk?
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas plays also sort of a similarly good everyman-ish kind of. Right.
But a single.
A single president.
But he falls in love. It's the idea, can a president date? That seems to be the debate of the movie. A president date?
I think we know the answer.
He dated the woman who's the wife of...
Annette Bening.
Annette Bening.
Warren Beatty's wife, right?
That's right.
Who often has been spoken about as getting into politics as well.
I think that ship has sailed, but still, there was a time. You're right.
And a couple of listeners emailing to say they can't believe we've gone this far in the discussion without mentioning Idiocracy. The real prescient film. So that's the Luke Will. Is it Luke, Rob? Rob Braden, our engineer, threw his arms up like, yes. Luke Wilson is set, I think, in the future. But I haven't seen it. I'm sorry for all the listeners who are sending Idiocracy.
I haven't either.
Less? Oh, my gosh. None of the three of us have seen Idiocracy.
My God, we need a new paddle.
Rob, jump. Rob's going to jump on the computer in a second and just let me know what Idiocracy is about. But a lot of people are writing to say that that is the true prescient film for our time. And I suspect that it doesn't reflect well on their view of the American public right now.
Yeah. Another good film, if I may quickly dive in with the documentary. We haven't talked about documentaries at all, but there is a really great one I made on the rise of Clinton to the presidency called The War Room, which made James Carville a star. And also the guy from the ABC morning show.
George Stephanopoulos.
They both became stars out of this movie because they were such strong characters in the effort of Clinton to become president.
Well, you know, Jack is usually the one who knows the local connections, but I have one now. James Carville and Marley Matlin's daughter goes to Hobart William Smith.
Is that right?
Carville and Matlin were just at Hobart doing a Republican-Democratic debate. They've been very good. He was our speaker a while ago, and he actually had a funny comment. Someone said to him, "What's your daughter? Is she a Republican or is she a Democrat?" He said, "I'm happy when we get to make her bed." You know, Republican, Democrat, I don't know. You know, I brought along quickly, I want to mention this, two quick books for people who want to go further on this. There's one book called Hollywood Goes to Washington by Michael Coyne. And the second book is Here's Looking at You, subtitle Hollywood Film and Politics by Ernest Giglio, G-I-G-L-I-O. And in thinking about talking today about these, I'd look through both of them, and I would suggest them to anyone interested in this topic.
Now, we mentioned Warren Beatty, Bulworth. Mm-hmm. Bulworth being the idea that can anybody be absolutely unfiltered and blunt, and how would they do in politics? I think we got a little bit of a Bulworthian streak in the current campaign.
Oh, we do.
You guys think? What do you think?
Although
he's
not using any rap music, thank goodness.
Right.
No cultural appropriation.
Maybe tonight.
He did eat a Taco Bowl in Trump Tower. That was sort of strange.
Right. Yeah. Maybe tonight he'll
break into a rap music. Song.
I don't think Donald Trump's busting out any rap tonight. But do we like Bulworth? How do we feel?
Very strong.
Yeah, very strong.
And he's a smart guy on political issues and things, so he knows he made a smart movie. You know, it was good.
He made Reds too.
Reds,
which
more of an
Academy
historic
Award.
Piece. But
about the politics.
Before I grab one more phone call, on Jack's list was Charlie Wilson's War, and for me, that is an example of why we miss Philip Seymour Hoffman so much, because he could play anything, and I thought he was fabulous in Charlie Wilson.
Yeah, that scene when he breaks the window. That's one of the great most used clips. Everybody shows it.
But his language was so off the wall that I couldn't quite use it for our show today. Trust me.
And you know, we've talked about Henry Fonda and Jimmy Stewart as kind of American everyman. I mean, I think they're child, if you want. The current version of that is Tom Hanks.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I don't think he's made a political movie, has he? An overtly
Well,
one.
Charlie Wilson.
I was just talking about it. I was so obsessed with Phil, I forgot about Charlie.
Charlie Wilson. He was Charlie Wilson.
But you're right. He is the Spencer Tracy. I mean, the two guys you mentioned.
Fonda and Stewart
of this generation.
Rob, by the way, our engineer, informs us that Idiocracy is set about 500 years in the future, and we've become such an internet MTV society that we have elected a professional wrestler as president.
Well, didn't we elect one as governor?
Yeah.
Jesse Ventura was the governor. A libertarian governor. And he contemplated a run for president.
It is very hard to be satiric about politics, isn't it?
Right now it is. Like because real life feels like satire.
Yeah, exactly. It does.
Right exactly.
So let me grab one more call, and this is Peter in Rochester. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi, Evan. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
The quick one I wanted to mention is a series that I really liked from England, actually called Black Mirror. Mm-hmm. It's a whole series of TV specials that they did where they kind of look at society from a strange angle. But one of them was about a cartoon character that was a famous TV host that likes to roast people and talk off the cuff. And he actually becomes a political figure because he's making fun of politicians. And so people start rallying behind him. And then the person who's running this cartoon character, has a conscience about some of the ideals that the network wants him to drive, and he he's like, I can't do this, and then somebody replaces him. And it's interesting how it takes takes our society in this little bit dystopian way with it.
Right.
Well, thank you, Peter.
Yes. You know, he reminds me of something we haven't mentioned. I don't know if you've watched it, House of Cards.
Yeah, that hasn't come up, but I have been enjoying it. Yeah,
oh.
I mean, it's sort of a guilty pleasure.
It is a guilty
every February
pleasure.
When it comes out with a new season. So season five coming.
Coming. And once again, it's hard for that show to stay ahead. Now there, the president actually kills someone, but that has been suggested.
Yeah.
Of course,
kills him himself. I think at least one
himself.
Person.
Yeah.
And by the way, Chris on Twitter says, "Seriously, Evan Dawson, none of you have seen Idiocracy.
No.
It is frighteningly predictive." And Joanna says, "At this point, you don't need to see it. We are living it." So okay, thank you, Joanna. So as we wrap the hour, Les, I'll start with you. We've talked about a lot of films, and our listeners, I think, like me, probably haven't seen most of these films. If there's one on the list, if there's one film that if you haven't seen it, see it. You would say what?
Well, it's not going to surprise you. You should see Wag the Dog.
Wag the Dog. Jack Garner, if there's one film on this list, if you haven't seen it, see it.
We didn't even talk about All the President's Men, but that's a whole other one. But that's more
show.
About the media. I would say Duck Soup.
Yeah. Duck Soup.
That would be a good
you
double, wouldn't
see
it?
Duck
Soup and then Wag the Dog.
And Wag the Dog. Animals galore.
Yeah.
And I agree. All the President's Men is certainly a political film, but it is a media film. And
it is.
I think Woodward and Bernstein have a lot of their post 70s success to to thank to that film.
Right,
they become heroes to that.
Right.
Redford and
Hoffman.
Oh, Philip. Dustin Hoffman. My goodness.
Phil would have been great in it too.
He would have.
He'd be great
he would have been great if he were alive at the time.
Anything.
No, that's fabulous. That really great stuff. Always fun with Les Friedman from Hobart and William Smith. Thank you, Les. Thanks for giving
You're
us
welcome.
The education
great
this
fun.
Hour. Jack Garner, as always.
Nice. A lot of fun.
Yeah. Boy, we. This election season, we need a little fun and a little lightness sometimes.
Yeah, I just can't wait for it to end.
Yeah. Well, the next film you'll see is a 90-minute film tonight. It starts at 9 o'clock. It's called The Next Debate, and we'll see how it turns out. You might find it a comedy or a tragedy. We'll see.
Yeah, a little bit of both.
We'll see. Our thanks to Rob Braden, Megan Mack, who really hustled this hour and is the reason we had all these great clips and information. Thanks to Megan. And thank you for listening to member-supported public radio. We'll talk to you on a Tuesday.